And thank you, Area 15, District 6 Literature Committee, for inviting me here tonight to speak about the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I just absolutely love. I'm Leslie. I am a recovered alcoholic. I have a home group. It's Searchers Group. It's located outside of Atlanta, Georgia. I have a sponsor who knows she's my sponsor, whom I speak with. I have a sobriety date of July 11th, 2015, and I also have the tremendous privilege of sponsoring women in all three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tonight I'm here to speak about Tradition 2, which the tradition reads, "For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience." And then for the so-called short form, as Bill pulls it, we add on, "Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern." And I love that this is the one tradition where the so-called short form is longer than the tradition itself. So we're talking about group conscience, right? And how God expresses himself. And before we get there, I just want to kind of lay the foundation for that. And why is the group so important? And I have a couple of pieces of literature that I'm going to be referencing. Most of it is going to come from the AA group pamphlet, but I also have 12 Traditions Illustrated. I have just a brief sentence or two from our service manual, a very little bit from AA Comes of Age, and then also a very little smattering from Language of the Heart. So if you have those are the only pieces of literature that I'll be referencing tonight. Okay, so the group. It says, "Our traditions are a guide to better ways of working and living," co-founder Bill W. said, "and they are to group survival what AA's 12 steps are to each member's sobriety and peace of mind. Most individuals cannot recover unless there is a group. The group must survive or the individual will not." Also in this pamphlet, 12 Traditions Illustrated, if we flip the page, it says, in regards to Tradition 1, each of the other 11 traditions, so meaning Traditions 2 through 12, explains one specific way to protect the unity of the fellowship and the AA group. So even though we're going to be talking about Tradition 2 tonight, we're still talking about how Tradition 2, what are we sacrificing as an AA member, as an individual AA member, but also what are we sacrificing as a AA group member in this tradition to uphold the unity of the group as a whole. And so I encourage you as as we're going through this tonight to think about what am I sacrificing and what do I sacrifice as a group member in this tradition. So the traditions in general are not about me and they're not about you, and they are very much about the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we 30 AA members are here. We've been saved, God. Like, we hold the keys to the kingdom now. But what about, I have two kids upstairs who are getting ready to go back to school tomorrow after their winter break. What about them? What about the baby that was just born, 3 minutes ago that hasn't even taken a full breath and might be an alcoholic? These traditions are about making sure that when the next group of people, when the next generation comes along and they need Alcoholics Anonymous, it is here and it is intact and it is exactly as it started, right? Because we've already been saved. So if it all went away tomorrow, we would be able to say, hey, we know what to do. We have the toolkit. Let's keep doing it. So before understanding the traditions, they sound a lot like rules, in my opinion, right? And I'm going to speak as best as I can tonight, because especially when speaking about the traditions, it is so important to speak from the literature and not from my opinion, because who cares about my opinion? But to me, they sounded a lot like rules. They sound like something that definitely applied to a group, but I'm just one member. And they actually sounded a lot like some loopholes that if you can just jump properly through the loopholes, you're in the clear. And all of that coming from an AA member who, when I got here, I really didn't want to change anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't looking to cross out words and move this one from here to there and all of that, but still I could see where there were potential ways to say that I'm just a member, I'm not a group, I can still behave in this other way. Okay, however, what happened to me in my experience of this is I had been spending years in my group reading the traditions once a month from one piece of literature. And one AA member who loves the traditions dearly started announcing at a meeting that there was going to be a Traditions and Steps weekend workshop. And because of that one member, and I might get choked up even just talking about that, I think he's here tonight. Because of that one member who loved the traditions, who recommended that I go to that workshop, my life changed. One weekend workshop that just completely blew my mind. And I started to understand the traditions in a way that I didn't even know was possible. And they started to go from being on the page to in my head to then now I'm having real experiences with these traditions to my heart. And when they go from the head to the heart, again, in my opinion, in my own experience, you cannot unknow them. You cannot continue to look for the loopholes and also live these traditions. It's just not possible for those two things to coexist. And so I hope that as these 12 weeks go along, that you get to have a new experience with the traditions as well. Okay, so one of the things that I heard, one member, and this is why it's so important to show up to meetings and to share, even when you don't know that you necessarily have something to share, if you actually have experience. One member said that she had heard an old timer say, if you think that you know the traditions, but you've only read them from the 12 and 12, that's like saying that you've worked the steps, but you've never read the big book. And she said, in her mind, she thought, challenge accepted. And as those words were coming out of her mind, I'm thinking the same thing. And so now I'm going out and I'm buying pamphlets, right, from my central office, and I'm ordering literature that I just didn't know. Nobody had said to me, we have hundreds of pieces of literature. I thought we had the big book, I thought we had the 12 and 12, and that was my whole experience. And oh my goodness, did we have so much more than that. And so challenge, you know, extended to all of you that even if you have read so many different pieces of literature, find one piece of literature that you haven't read and see if you can have a new experience. Okay, now to tradition two, we have one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. So who is in charge, right? In this is, I think, the last reference to the 12 Traditions Illustrated, it says, then who's in charge around here? AA is a spiritual movement. And so the ultimate authority is a spiritual concept of the group conscience. Its voice is heard when a well-informed group gathers to arrive at a decision. The result rests on more than arithmetic, a yes or no count. Minority ideas get thoughtful attention. What about that annoying character who's always sure she's right? I think this is me. Better listen. Maybe just this once she is right. If she's wrong, then she will, if she remembers the first tradition as well as the second, go along with the decision of the group conscience. Does this notion seem too cloudy? Let's think back to our first meetings. The presence we newcomers felt in those rooms was the same as the group conscience, and it was real, welcoming us in, setting up no barriers of rules. Okay, so we can't really talk about group conscience without talking about what's a group. Okay, and now we're going to jump into the AA group pamphlet. If you don't have this, this is a must-have. This is the manual to being a group member. Just like you get a manual to your car or to another appliance or anything big in your life, this is a manual. Okay, so a group versus a meeting. If you have this and you're reading along, I'm going to go to page 12. And it says, is there a difference between a meeting and a group? Most AA members meet in AA groups as defined by the long form of our third tradition. However, some AA members hold AA meetings that differ from the common understanding of a group. These members, we're now talking about a meeting. These members simply gather at a set time and place for a meeting, perhaps for convenience or other special situations. The main difference between meetings and groups is that AA groups generally continue to exist outside the prescribed meeting hours, ready to provide 12-step help when needed. We have a lot of meetings in AA. And we have a lot of meetings that could look like a group. And if you are considering, you know, somebody actually in that first weekend workshop that I went to, somebody messaged me, actually the presenter messaged me, and he said, are you, what do you have a home group? And I said, yes. And he said, you know, what is its name? And I told him, and he said, are you a meeting or a group? And I instinctively said, we're a group. And then I said, wait, what's the difference? You know, I think we're a group, but what's the difference? And this talks about the difference, right? So you can have a meeting, and I'm part of a service committee that is a meeting. And we are very, very clear in that meeting script. This is a meeting and nothing more. We are here for this 1 hour. The people who are in service to this meeting are in service only for 1 hour here. And we all have home groups in our local areas where we're also in service. So that meeting is clearly defined as just a meeting. Meetings don't have group conscience because they don't have, they're not a group. One thing that I heard that I absolutely just love is, I think it's attributed to Don Peake, and he said, you can tell the strength of a meeting by what happens during, from the end of the Serenity Prayer to the Lord's Prayer, right? So what happens during that hour? That's how you can judge a meeting. And you can judge a group by what happens from the close of the Lord's Prayer to the next Serenity Prayer. So what are they doing outside of that hour? Are you getting together to celebrate life, sobriety, each other's anniversaries? Are you doing, you know, carrying the message into correctional facilities or hospitals or any other group activity to help that alcoholic who's still sick and suffering? How are you guys as a group doing 12-step work? Okay. Why is it so important? Why does it really matter the difference between a group and a meeting, right? If I want to just go to a meeting and that's where, you know, that's where my friends go. Those are the people that I like. I like that meeting. Like, why does it matter if I'm a group? Here's why it matters. And this is the only thing that I'm going to read from the service manual, but I think it really has to be stated. This is from concept one. The final responsibility and the ultimate authority for AA World Services should always reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. The AA groups today hold ultimate responsibility and final authority for our World Services. Those special elements of overall service activity which make it possible for our society to function as a whole. The groups assumed that responsibility at the St. Louis International Convention of 1955. The groups hold that. Meetings don't. If you're not connected to the whole structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't have any voice. You don't have any vote. All you have is just this little tiny group of people in one little city having a nice meeting, which is different than being a group member. Then I'm sorry. The other thing that I wanted to say about that before I move any further is this. And this is from Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. Here is our experience together in this family. This is your inheritance. This is for you to multiply or to squander. Take it. Go out and meet life. We'll stand by. We'll help when the going is tough, but now you are on your own. We can no longer decide for you, act for you, protect you. We can only love you with all our hearts. The rest is up to God and yourself. That is from Bill W. as he's handing over the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous to the fellowship. This is our inheritance. So are we going to squander it? Or are we going to preserve it? Make sure that it's here for the next person, right? I can almost say that without crying, but that's how important it is. And you don't, if you're not connected to a group, then you're not connected to your inheritance. Why do you want to be part of a home group? Back in the pamphlet, our manual, traditionally, most AA members through the years have found it important to belong to one group that they call their home group. This is the group where they accept service responsibilities and try to sustain friendships. And although all AA members are usually welcome at all groups and feel at home in any of these meetings, the concept of the home group has still remained the strongest bond between the AA member and the fellowship. I am one person. I am one member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am one member of my home group. I get one vote, right? Only home group members vote in anything that's happening at the home group, right? In that business meeting, I get to vote once. I have one voice. We don't, in our group, we allow outsiders to observe the business meeting, but only home group members can vote. So if that's where I'm doing my service, if that's where my voice is being heard, that's where I'm holding service positions. I love my neighbors, right? But I don't go over to their house and cook dinner or do any of their chores. I do all of my chores in my own house. And when they come over to my house, I don't expect them to do any chores here either. I expect them to come as a guest and enjoy and then go home, right? If I'm doing service in two groups, and I'm speaking from experience here, because I made this mistake. If I'm doing service in two groups, now I'm going to two different business meetings, right? And now I'm involved in the conversation of two different home groups. And now I'm voting, right? And in my case, what happened was it was when everything was online and I didn't know any better. And you guys, I took an annual position, right? I'm not talking like I chaired a meeting at another. I took an annual position because I didn't know any better. So it wasn't like, you know, this big ego, I think I can do it better. And I think that group needs to, you know, hear my voice. No, I love this group. I'm going to all of their meetings. The need came up. I was willing and able to serve and I just didn't know any better. And when I did know, I went back to that group and I said, oh gosh, I've made a really big mistake. I need to get out of this position. Now, I wasn't willing to leave them, you know, they did not hold an emergency elections, but in that next election, first of all, I stopped voting, right? Because that's an absolute no-no. But I stopped going, you know, just participating in all of it and just sit there as a fly on the wall. And I had a responsibility to the group and I was going to see that through. And that was it. Right. So I tried to correct it as much as I could until there were new elections. And then I was able to cleanly walk away. But that's from my own experience. You know, I've made this mistake just because I didn't know any better. So how does the one ultimate authority speak? Right. How does God express himself in our group conscience? Through an informed AA group conscience. So we're going to flip over to page 28. And talk about what is an informed AA group conscience. The group conscience is the collective conscience of the group membership and thus represents substantial unanimity on an issue before definitive action is taken. This is achieved by the group members through the sharing of full information, individual points of view, and the practice of AA principles. To be fully informed requires a willingness to listen to minority opinions with an open mind. On sensitive issues, the group works slowly, discouraging formal motions until a clear sense of its collective view emerges. Placing principles before personalities, the membership is weary of dominant opinions. Its voice is heard when a well-informed group arrives at a decision. The result rests on more than a yes or no count, precisely because it is the spiritual expression of the group conscience. The term informed group conscience implies that pertinent information has been studied and all views have been heard before the group votes. So that just laid out some like really big key words, right? We're working with open mind, slowly. All pertinent information is studied. All views are heard. Minority opinion is asked for. And then we ask, does this change anyone's mind? And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. But the process is that we're making sure to say, has every group member had the chance to express themselves? Have we heard all of the voices? Are we really thinking this through, or are we saying, this is what I want? Let's, you know, brute force forward. If all of that has taken place, we've reached an informed group conscience. The opposite of an informed group conscience is ignorant majority. And the first time I heard that, I thought, I do not like the way that sounds. That's really harsh, right? Ignorant majority, but ignorant is just without information, without the knowledge. If we're not hearing all the points of view, if we're taking that vote before somebody gets to express themselves, if we're rushing through something without thinking it through, if we don't have all of the information to study, then we have not reached an informed group conscience. Back in Language of the Heart, it talks about, Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. It says the very first session, the conference had suggested that General Service Conference had suggested that the Alcoholic Foundation ought to be renamed the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. But they would not hurry in this matter. It was after 2 more years of careful consideration that this suggestion became a decision and was carried out. So it took 2 years plus, actually, to make that one decision, because they want to make sure that we're not rushing, that we're studying all the information, that we're thinking through pros and cons, any potential consequences that we're not thinking of, really deliberate thought. So I last December missed my first business meeting because I was away, and I happened to see the secretary had sent out what the agenda was. And I knew since I was away, I wasn't going to be at the business meeting. It wasn't anything that I could help. And if I'm not at the business meeting, I don't get a vote, right? My voice isn't going to be heard. But we talked about adding on an anniversary meeting. And this is something that my group has talked about from time to time over the last several years. And so I saw that it was on the agenda and I'm not going to be there. And so I said, I'm not there. I won't get to vote. However, I'm just going to put this out there, and then you guys obviously will do with it whatever you feel is the right thing to do. But here are some questions I have about having an anniversary meeting. I know that we had talked about, you know, it would be an open speaker meeting. It would be the last Saturday of the month. We would have cake, right? I knew some of the details, but then I said, do we have a budget for the cake? Are we going to have like a committee of some sort? Who's going to logistically like order the cake, pick up the cake, et cetera? Who's the speaker seeker? If it's the group of people who are celebrating their anniversary that month, in some of our months, we might have 7, 8 people. How are we going to decide who's the speaker seeker? I mean, the list, I can go on all day with questions, and the point is not that I want to throw out objections to my group. I'm not trying to be, you know, a pain, but the point is there's a lot to think through in at are we going to write a new script, because this is very different than our other meetings during the week. Like, I can go on and on and on. Let's think it through. It sounds like, you know, it's just another meeting. We already have a lot of meetings. What's the big deal? But it is, there's a lot of detail that if we just rush over to our central office and say, we've added on this meeting, and now people start to come and we don't know what any of the details are and we're caught completely unprepared, that's not going to be a good thing. So let's talk through these things. Let's make a list of what are all the questions and let's start tackling them so that we can have an informed group conscience of what our Saturday night, you know, speaker meeting is going to look like. And then we can start inviting people to come celebrate that with us. So, how frequently does your group listen to God? My group was having business meetings once a quarter. And then I realized the implication of that is actually not, it's not implication. The fact is that 4 months out of the year, we were asking God to speak through our collective group conscience. The other 8 months of the year, we were saying, we've got it. We know what's best. And when I brought that to my group, they said, absolutely, let's change that. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. And I said, I hadn't thought about it like that either. You know, and so now we have this information, we're learning together. And so now we meet monthly. On page 30, if we just flip right over, it talks, it says, you know, when do we hold these meetings? And that in an AA business meeting, right? In most groups, that is not what I was going to read. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry. So before a vote is taken, it's essential that the members be given all facts relevant to the subject at hand. In many cases, a few members may be asked to look into the pros and cons of the issue and present them at the meeting. Arriving at an informed group conscience in big matters or small is a process that may take some time. But it is important that minority or dissenting views be heard along with those of majority. In some instances, they may even turn the tide. All right. So talked about an informed group conscience. What's an example of ignorant majority? If you have a closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is meant for AA members or people who think that they have a problem with drinking, and I bring my husband with me, and you decide on the fly, that's okay. They're already here. It's not a big deal. You know, that's an ignorant majority vote. That's when you take the pulse of the room and you're asking the people who are in that meeting to make a decision. Whether they're home group members or not doesn't even matter at this point. It's not an informed group conscience. We can't just make decisions on the fly, right? All of the group decisions are meant to be reached collectively. Group conscience is reached by inviting all of the known group members to the table in a business meeting and putting that, you want to change that closed meeting to an open meeting so that observers and professionals and folks from other 12-step fellowships can come, then, you know, fantastic, and bring that as an agenda item to a business meeting. But we don't get to just make decisions in one particular meeting. And I've definitely seen that happen. If my group elects me to be, my group elects me to be the timekeeper, and I decide that that's a newcomer, I don't really want to insult them, so I'm not going to use the time, you know, I'm not going to use the time on that person, or love what this person has to share, so I'm just going to let them, you know, talk until they're done. That's me telling God, like, I know that as a group, we decided we were going to use a timer, but I know better than you. Right? That is me now governing, not serving. Okay. When I change the script of a meeting or I go, go wildly off script, I don't mean like miss a comma or something, but that's not serving my group. That's governing my group. And that is also me putting personalities before principles. How am I doing on time? Okay. The first decision that was made by a group conscience is talked about in a number of different pieces of literature. And it's actually Bill W. not taking a job at Towns Hospital. And he had been, had been talking about this job with Charlie Towns, and he's riding the subway home and he's thinking about how excited he is. This is going to change his life. It's going to put money in his pocket. It may mean that Lois wouldn't have to work anymore. Why shouldn't he take this job? It's an ethical proposal, right? Maybe he'll reach more alcoholics if he has an office. All this is looking and sounding so great to him. And he gets home and there's, the meeting that night, and he brings it up to the group and everybody's face drops. And they agree, yes, what you're saying is ethical, sure. And then they start voicing some concerns. And thank goodness he realized that collectively the group knew better than him. And he said, thank God I obeyed. Right? I don't know what God's will is for my group. And you don't know what God's will is for my group or for your group. But together and as a group, collectively, we get to learn what God's will is for our group. And the group conscience is never wrong. We can make mistakes and we can right the ship. We can correct those mistakes if, as a group, we agree we've made a mistake. But generally speaking, that group conscience is not wrong when all of the voices have been heard. All right. So that is first part of the tradition, right? The second part, and I just have a little bit to say on this, is that our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern, right? And we talked a little bit about when I am a trusted servant and I decide that I'm going to go do things my own way, that is an example of governing. Leaders are but trusted servants. I have heard so many times, we don't have leaders. Well, yes, we absolutely do have leaders. We've elected them to be in that position for a duration of time. And there is an essay that is in Concept 9 of our service manual, and it's also in Language of the Heart, and it is Leadership in AA, Ever a Vital Need. If you haven't read that, it's beautiful. And you can find it in a few places, like I said. And then we have from Language of the Heart, we have the group conscience will in the end prove a far more infallible guide for group affairs than the decision of any individual member, however good or wise he may be. This is a striking and almost unbelievable fact about Alcoholics Anonymous. Hence, we can safely dispense with those exhortations and punishments seemingly so necessary to other societies. And we need not depend overmuch on inspired leaders. Because our active leadership of service can be truly rotating, we enjoy a kind of democracy rarely possible elsewhere. In this respect, we may be, to a large degree, unique. So we finally get our uniqueness. We're elected into our positions, right? It's supposed to be for a clearly defined amount of time. I am at my group, the treasurer position is 2 years, whereas most of the other home group positions are one, like secretary, chairperson, literature. Those are all one. Treasurer is two. I just rotated out as the treasurer for my home group. As the treasurer, when that was my position, I put a couple of things in place that hadn't previously been in place that made sense to me, that made me more efficient and more organized. And then I rotated out and somebody rotated in. And our new treasurer has changed the things that I had done. And he actually used the words yesterday. He said, yeah, what I did makes more sense to me. And I said, that's perfect. That's all that matters. It's right now it's his position and he gets to make things, you know, organized and efficient for him. But what we don't get to do as that trusted servant is decide where our money is going to go. Right. That was a decision that we made as a group. So just because I'm writing and signing the checks for those 2 years, I don't change our distribution percentages, right? Where we contribute to the other AA entities. I don't have that kind of power. I'm just fulfilling my duty as that trusted servant during that period of time. Okay, real quick from the pamphlet, the AA group pamphlet. And speaking of positions, this references tradition one and two. It says the group's welfare is of primary concern in choosing officers. At election time, a review of traditions one and two can be helpful. And on page 28, to step out of an AA office you love can be hard. If you've been doing a good job, if you honestly don't see anyone else around willing, qualified, or with the time to do it, and if your friends agree, it's especially tough. But it can be a real step forward in growth, a step into the humility that is, for some people, the spiritual essence of anonymity. I think I'm almost out of time. You know, for this tradition, I used to hear people as a newcomer, and I absolutely loved it as a newcomer, I've got to say, used to hear, you're the most important person in the room. You know, thank goodness you're here. You're the most important. And what this tradition says is, no, I'm not, thank goodness, right? I am no better than you. I am no less than you. Thank God, because my life depends upon it. I am no different than you. This tradition is very much, you know, an ego deflating proposition, right? This says, whether you are an old timer and you have decades of sobriety, or you got here 4 minutes ago, who cares? It does not matter. What matters is how God expresses himself as heard through the collective group conscience, and that person with decades and that person with minutes as home group members both have the same one vote each. So their one voice can be heard. And that is all that I have on this tradition. Thank you so much for letting me share tonight.